for the record, you're okay with being recorded and...
Yes, I give you permission.
And you're okay with this recording possibly being published?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I just want to ask you about your parents, because I never really got to know them very well.
Okay.
So, who were your parents, and can you tell me about them? Like,
my father was, his name was William Victor Mesha. He was first generation Italian. He was born in Chicago in 1908 on September 7th. He had four sisters and a brother. His parents came from Italy during the Italian migration to the United States in the late 1890s and early 1900s. His father worked for the railroad. His mother was a stay-at-home mother. Thing about my father, didn't know too much about him. He was the youngest in the family. Never went past seventh grade, yet he could spell any word in the dictionary only by because he played crossword puzzles for the last 50 years. He died in 1983, and he was a United States Army veteran, fought in World War II in the Pacific, and worked very hard his entire life. He retired at 65, and he was a very good father. My mother, her name was Eileen Frances O'Leary. Her parents were not first or second generation immigrants, but they were, their ancestors did come from Ireland. I'm believing they came over during the potato famine in the 1840s and 1850s. Father's name was John, and my my grandmother's name was Augusta. They were from County Cork. My mother came from a large family, and they were, of course, Depression children. They all lived with each other, lived together. My mother worked as an accountant. She went to grade school and 2 years of high school. And when she married my father, she became a stay-at-home mother. Later, when we were in high school, she went to work in retail in a dress store. My mother was born on February 1st, 1920, and she died in 1997.
So you said they, well, your mother was a Depression era child, and I'm...
So was my father, yes.
So did they ever talk about that, like what that was like, or...
Well, the old saying was my mother could take a dollar and stretch it into 10, which meant that they were frugal, but not, I mean, we didn't live on, you know, hot dogs and beans all the time. But we never owned a home, never had a car. The main thing that my parents wanted for my sister and I was to have a parochial education, being in the Catholic schools. So that's pretty much what they put their money for. They both worked very hard. They both were loving parents, good parents. Didn't make a lot of rules. And most of it was common sense on our part, my sister and I, that right was right and wrong was wrong. So yes, they were Depression era kids, and they also lived during World War II. My father, of course, being in the Army. My mother having several of her brothers and nephews in the Army. So, yeah, they went through some very trying times, character-building times.
Did your father ever talk about his time in the service, or...
My dad saw combat, but he didn't really talk about it until we were older. He never was a big war movie guy, because that's exactly what they were, romanticizing battle, which he found not very romantic. Excuse me.
You're fine.
He spent 3 years overseas. He had malaria. He did start to talk about it when I was older, and being that I have a deep interest in history, he knew I could relate to a lot of what he was saying.
Did he say where he toured?
He was in the Pacific. Australia, the Philippines, New Zealand. Saw combat. Didn't get wounded, but of course, like all veterans, it left a indelible mark on his memory, and he most certainly never talked about it in any type of a heroic way. He didn't ever thought of himself as anything other than a soldier that did his duty for his country.
Okay. Can you tell me about your relationship with your parents?
Well, like any firstborn son, as a youth, it was good. We always had plenty to eat. We dressed warm. We always lived in apartments, but that never really mattered. There was a very tight connection with us, my sister and I and our parents. We didn't go on vacations or have a summer home or anything like that, but we made the best of it. Christmas was always the best time of year. Always a celebration, always a tree, always presents. When I got into high school, though, of course, like all adolescents, I thought I knew more than they did. So, of course, there was friction there, especially when I was starting to learn a few things outside of the usual parochial school, grade school curriculum. When I got into high school and things like psychology came along and history came along, of course, I had to be basically put in my place. They were never physical. They didn't beat us. My dad maybe used the belt on me once, and it said, and here's an interesting quote, when he did use it, he said, "This is going to hurt me more than it's going to hurt you," and I couldn't quite understand it at the time. But, of course, being older and having children of my own, I most certainly understood what he said. When I got into my 20s, I didn't move out because it was a good house to live in. My parents never pushed me to move away. I had no reason to move away. It was a good family situation. I worked. I paid room and board. And they gave me freedom, but I wasn't excessive in a lot of things. And when they got older, we tried to take care of them as much as we could, my sister and I, as far as chipping in and as far as money. And it was a good home life. It was very good.
To cycle back to you mentioned Christmas, and I know we do a lot of Christmas traditions. What were some of the traditions you had when you were a kid, and what's carried over throughout the years?
My father usually worked on Christmas Eve, so he wouldn't get out till noon. So he was home in the afternoon. A few times we would go out and have lunch, and usually go over to some place like Osco or Walgreens, and my dad used to like to just comb the shelves for Christmas decorations and Christmas goodies. Always had Christmas candy. Another tradition was going to midnight mass together at Our Lady of Mercy, which was our parish at the time where I went to grade school and my sister. Matter of fact, my mother went to grade school. It's a school on the north side of Chicago. The school is closed, but the parish is still open. And that's in Albany Park, northwest side of Chicago. Christmas Day traditions. Mom usually would cook, you know, with turkey or make a roast, and we would open up presents. And again, we didn't get, you know, bicycles or automobiles for Christmas, but Christmas was nice. We used to, it was a very warm feeling. We had a Christmas tree every year and listen to Christmas music.
You guys would decorate the tree Christmas Eve, right? It's not like what we do.
When we were younger, yes. We stuck to the tradition of buying the tree. This is when we would buy real trees until my father got fed up with them falling apart and dying. And then eventually we got artificial trees, which he loved because it was you could put it away in January and not have to worry about it until December. But as we got older, we kind of pushed Dad to kind of decorated earlier. Now, we never decorated it on the day after Thanksgiving. That was unheard of. So I think the farthest we got out was about a week before that we would put the tree up and decorate it.
Really? A week?
Yeah.
Can it compare it to now where it's like now you get a month? Now we're
putting it up almost 2 weeks before. So, it was just, you know, everything was in a different perspective. You know, you celebrated Christmas within the day. Christmas Eve, of course, was the big day, Christmas Day. Just like Halloween or Thanksgiving as opposed to today. And I understand it from a retail point of view. You know, you start seeing Christmas stuff at the end of September. Well, of course, retailers want to get a jump on it. But when we were younger, you didn't see much of that. You saw the Halloween candy hit the shelves about 2 weeks before Halloween. They started selling Thanksgiving turkeys about 2 or 3 weeks before Thanksgiving, and the same thing about Christmas. You know, Christmas trees weren't for sale until after Thanksgiving. Excuse me. So, yeah, there's a lot of difference between when we were kids and what happens today.
I have to know, what would your dad think of this whole mindset we have now of you got to celebrate Christmas like a month in advance?
He would probably criticize it, him being a traditionalist. But I find a lot of what he thinks, I find it in my own mind. You know, I even find it kind of baffling that you start buying Christmas stuff at the end of August in Walmart or Target. When I was younger, you know, we never saw that. And when my dad was a kid, you know, there was probably a lot of times when they never had a Christmas tree. And I think that's why it was so important when he got married and had a family to bring those traditions back, some of them that he missed out on, most certainly when he was overseas, and to try to give some meaning to not only that time of year, but also make it a family tradition, something that you could remember.
That's awesome. Let's see. Do you remember a time when you felt particularly close to either one of your parents? You could say both, like, pick a, like.
I'll tell us one thing that my dad and I had a good relationship. We, you know, we didn't go hunting or anything like that. And we talked. He liked baseball. He was a Sox fan. I was a Cub fan. We watched baseball a lot. But of course, you know, when we were kids, we watched what Mom watched. Mom and Dad was Lawrence Welk or Sing Along with Mitch or some sort of, you know.
You are saying things I have never heard of.
Well, yeah, well, I'm talking 50, 60 years ago. Excuse me. But I remember when I started working and my dad was retired. And I remember as a kid, my dad would come home and I was really excited to see him. And he was beat. And he'd come in and he'd eat dinner. And a lot of times I'd want to talk to him and he would just struggle to try to stay awake to listen to my mundane, "Dad, I did this today. We played catch in the alley," that sort of thing. And I'd watch him struggle because he wanted to take a nap. Well, years later, when I was working and I was, you know, putting in a lot of time, I used to come home from work and I remember I came home one day and he was retired. He had spent the whole day with my mother, so he was looking for some male bonding. And he came in and he started telling me, you know, about, "Oh yeah, I went and bought some pork chops over at National and I got a sale on them." And I found myself in that same position, trying to stay awake and almost falling asleep, and he just stopped in his conversation and he patted my foot and he says, "I understand, son. I'll let you rest." And at that moment, again, I got it. Just like when he said, when he spanked me, "This is gonna hurt me more than it's gonna hurt you." With him just saying that, I understood what he was talking about. Those were the bonding moments. Those were the special moments. Those were the ones that I always remember. Just those little things. You know, his love for me as a father is very special.
Do you remember a time when you've made them angry? And I kind of, the one story that comes to mind that you told me was the jacket story.
Too many to count, but the jacket story is a good one. When we lived, even when we lived, we lived in a few places, a few apartments. We lived at 4500 North Sacramento when we were kids. We lived at 3149 West Sunnyside. And then the final apartment, which was above a store, which was kind of nice, which is almost like our own house, but of course it wasn't, was at 3144 West Montrose. And these were all in a proximity of maybe less than a quarter of a mile each other. So we never really left the neighborhood. Well, the one pet peeve my father had was people hanging their coats on the back of chairs, especially the dining room. Well, when we lived on, he would put up with it when we were in high school and stuff. But when we lived on Montrose, we didn't have a front closet. We had one that was all the way in the back, and that's where you hung all your coats and stuff. Well, I had this brand new Eddie Bauer coat, which cost me at the time about $200. And when I would come home, I would hang it on the back of one of the chairs, and my dad wasn't saying anything. Well, one night I came home, and he must have been in a foul mood, and I put the jacket on the back of the chair, and I went into my room, which was off the kitchen. Well, in between that time when I was in my room and when I came out, he had taken the coat off the back of the chair, and he threw it out in the backyard. Now, this is in the middle of January. Here's a $200 coat. I came out, and I said, "Where's my coat?" My dad, "It's out in the backyard." I said, "What do you mean? Because you've been hanging that damn coat on the back of the chair for the last 20 years. You're not going to do it anymore." So I didn't say anything because I could tell if I said anything, it would have just made the matter worse. It would have been gasoline on a fire. So I went outside, got my coat, came upstairs, and didn't say anything. Well, I was down in Piper's Alley, which is an old town, and they had a brass shop. And they had this brass coat rack. So I bought it, and I brought it home. I took it upstairs, and I put it in the dining room next to the buffet. There was room there. And I took my coat off and looked at him, and I hung it up on the rack, the new coat rack, and went to bed. When I got up the next day, lo and behold, not only do I see his coat hanging on it, but his hat. And I said, "Well, what do you think, Dad?" "Well, that looks pretty good. Too bad we didn't have something like that 20 years ago. You could have used it then." And that was one of the classic disagreements that we had, but it all came to a comical conclusion.
Got a nice shiny new coat rack out of it, it sounds like.
And we had that rack a long time. We even had it here, so. It was nice. It was a nice rack.
You touched on it a little bit, but talking about where you grew up and like where your parents lived, and you want to expand on that some
my
more?
My dad lived on the south side of Chicago primarily most of his life. He lived in the old Italian neighborhoods. He lived at what was then called Crawford Avenue, which is now Pulaski. He actually lived by the Hull House, and for all people who don't know what that is, the Hull House was a halfway house for kids in the what they would call the old neighborhood. The University of Illinois Circle campus is in there now. And my dad actually took clarinet lessons at the old Hull House. Now you gotta remember, my dad was born in 1908, so, you know, that's over 100 years ago. My mother came to Albany Park in Our Lady of Mercy Parish when she was 6 years old, and actually was one of the first kids to go to what they called then the new Our Lady of Mercy School, which where she graduated. And she would remain in that parish until we moved in 1984. So she was there over 60 years, and she belonged to the Altar and Rosary Society, and when she was younger, the Young Women's Group. She was always active in church. My mother was a devout Catholic. She took her religion very seriously. My father, well, he just did what my mother said. You know, he was happy to do whatever she wanted because he felt that he was part of something. My father came up to the North Side when he met my mother, and they eventually got married. And when they did, where they did live, is they lived on Bernard Street off of Irving Park. And what's funny now is that we actually live on Bernard Street now. So little did I know then when I was born that my parents would live on the same street that I would live on eventually when I, you know, when we purchased this house.
It all came full circle.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know where they met or how they met?
My father had a friend. He lived, when he came back from World War II, his family kind of scattered and it was kind of a shame. One point I must make is my father was somewhat of an enigma. We didn't know much about his youth. We just had bits and pieces. Not that it was dark or anything like that. It's just that there wasn't much love in his family. He was the youngest. He was a runt. His brother was kind of a gangster, kind of, and his sisters were all grown up and married. And so when he came back from World War II, and he had malaria, so he was sick. He was a sick guy. So anyway, he had this friend, the Paul family. Now they were Italians, and I'm sure Paul was not their original last name, because a lot of Italians changed their last name because to have a vowel at the end of your name meant that you didn't get hired very often in the working climate of the late 1890s and early 1900s. Anyway, this Paul family had a young daughter who ended up working with my mother. And now, you got to remember, my father was 11 years older than my mother. So he was in his late 30s, and my mom was in her late 20s. And this young lady from the Paul family said to my mother, you know, there's this guy, Bill. You know, he's friends with Sammy. And why don't you go out with him? My mom thought, I don't know, and blah, blah, blah. So they ended up eventually going on a date, and he took her to a drugstore which had a fountain. Now, most drugstores in Chicago were what they called corner drugstores, and they were both drugstores and fountains, soda fountain, where you could get milkshakes and ice cream sundaes and phosphates and Coke. And let me tell you, there was nothing like a fountain Coke, the best. The only other place that had Cokes that good was the Woolworths. When Woolworths used to serve lunches down in some of their stores, they always had what they called the best Cokes. They called them fountain Cokes, where the syrup was mixed in with the phosphate and the seltzer water. Anyway, they met and went on a date. And they started going out, and within a year they got engaged and they got married. And then 3 years later I came along, and 2 years after that my sister Rita was born. So
they didn't get together until after he came home from service.
Right, yeah.
Are there any funny stories that your family tells you? Can read. Are there any funny stories your family tells about you that come to mind?
Well, it's funny, but it's also kind of, I guess you could say it's comical when you think about it. And this ties in with the story about my father using the belt on me. I was called the Roamer. I was always going places I wasn't supposed to go. When you were a kid, you had certain streets you couldn't cross. There were certain places you couldn't go to. There were certain people you weren't supposed to talk to. Well, I had an affinity for fire trucks. And I basically still do. There's just something fascinating about a fire truck. Now, I never became a fireman. But even to this day, I'm fascinated by fire and firefighters. I think they do a great job. I think fire engines are unique apparatuses. Well, anyway, when we lived on Sacramento in Sunnyside, there's a firehouse. It's still there. It's what was on Kedzie off of Montrose. And it was Engine Company 124 and Truck Company 38. And it was an old classic structure built in 1917. So I ended up deciding I was going to go to the firehouse. So I went to the firehouse, and I went there probably about maybe noon, and this was in the summer. And I hung out, I was drinking iced tea, and the firemen were telling me stories, and they would, you know, when the bell would ring, I'd watch them pull out. So finally, one of the firemen came up and he said, "Hey kid, do you have a home to go to?" And, you know, when you're a kid, you have no concept of time. You know when it's dark out, when there's no sun. You know when it's raining out, when you're wet. But as far as time and looking at a watch, I was oblivious.
How old were you when this happened?
I was 7.
Oh my God.
So I start walking home. Now I have already crossed 2 streets that I wasn't supposed to cross. And of course I crossed a big street, which was Kedzie, which was taboo. So I have 3 counts against me. One of them being a major count. So as I'm walking home, I see 2 figures in the distance walking. And I knew right away who they were. One was my mother, the other was my father. My father walking with his face red, my mother walking with Kleenex crying. And I thought to myself, this is not good. I got to the corner of Albany and Sunnyside, and we lived at 6, so I had another block. My dad grabbed me by the arm. Now, he didn't grab me, rub me, just grabbed me by the arm, and he was pulling. My mother goes, "Where have you been? Where have you been? I've been looking all day. I've been worried sick." But my dad said nothing. He said nothing. So we get about a block away, and I start crying because I know something's up, and it's not going to be good. So we get into the house. My dad goes, "Go into the living room." So I go into the living room, and he says, "Take your pants down." So by this time, I'm screaming like, you know, I'm in the Spanish Inquisition or something, and I'm going to be tortured. And he put me over his knee, and he hit me, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 times. But there again, this, to repeat what he said before he struck me. He said, "This is going to hurt me more than it's going to hurt you." Well, I'm 7 years old. I'm thinking, I'm the one that's getting a butt whipping. What are you talking about? You know? So, of course, I'm screaming. And I go into my bedroom. And, of course, I hate everybody. I'm going to run away from home and blah, blah, blah. I got out my little suitcase and I put a baseball hat in there and maybe a couple of pairs of underwear and socks and my baseball mitt, whatever could fit. And I was going to run away. So my father told my mother, "Well, I want him grounded for a week." Well, that lasted 2 days because I drove my mother nuts. Of course, she wanted to watch her stories, and I was asking her, you know, Guiding Light and Search for Tomorrow. And that was pretty heavy stuff at the time. And I was asking her, "Well, who's this lady? And what's this lady?" I drove her nuts. Finally, my mom said, "I can't take it. Let him go out." But when we tell that story now, it does have kind of a humorous part to it because, you know, you learn. And once you learn that lesson, I asked when I wanted to go to the firehouse the next time.
I think I'm more floored at the fact that you're 7 and you think, oh yeah, I'll just go to the firehouse without letting my parents know where the hell I'm going.
That was an adventure.
Whereas, like, in this day and age, and again, that's kind of just what a stark difference. It's you're wandering the streets at 7 without supervision, whereas when I was 7, I couldn't go in the front yard without supervision.
It was also a different time. I mean, today, you know, everybody knew everybody in the neighborhood. You know, it was like, there was always a watch. You know, so-and-so's mom would see you smoking a cigarette. When I come home, my mother would say, somebody saw you smoking a cigarette. Well, you couldn't do that stuff. You know, it was like, the mothers of those days were like cameras. They saw, they took snapshots with their mind. They had a telephone. You know, they were like security cameras. So, but yeah, we had a lot of good times, a lot of stuff.